Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Hello, good evening. Welcome again to another Deserted Island Dish. We're here live in Sheffield, 7 o'clock. It's another sunny Wednesday night. We've had quite a few sunny Wednesdays, it's great. And tonight I've got a very special guest. I've been looking forward to this one. We've got Dermot Clacken. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. I'm good, thank you.
Welcome to the show. So we've got an hour of Dermot telling us about his life, and he's picked some song for us, and it's going to fly. He's got lots of stories to tell. Some of them are going to be funny as well. There's a few funny ones, aren't there?
Well, I hope to.
No, it's great to have you on here. So you were born in County Derry.
That's right,
1956. Balahi.
Balahi is right, yeah.
Have I said it right?
You've said it right, yes. Yeah.
Oh, very good. So what was life like there for you and your family?
It was, we had a small farm, like only a small farm, and there was 13 of us. It was a very, very pleasant childhood. We had a great time. We entertained each other. Yeah. For a long time, we had no electricity or we had no gas or no running water or anything like that. And we entertained each other and we got on very well, and it was a good life, yeah. It was a hard life. Don't get me wrong, my mum and dad weren't very well off, like, and they had 13 of us.
Yeah.
But we survived it, and touch wood, thank God now, there's all. My younger brother, unfortunately, was killed.
Oh.
When he was 15 months old, like, and other than that, we had a brilliant life. I wouldn't swap it for the world.
Oh, that must have been hard for family. So he was the youngest of...
He was the youngest, yeah. He was only learning to walk at the time, and he was killed. In them days, you used to have these mobile grocery vans that came round, delivering bread and sugar and butter and all the groceries that any household would need. And Kieran was only learning to walk, and we were in the old house at the time. And my mother stepped out of the van to go into the room, into the kitchen, and Kieran walked out behind her. And he could have fell forward in the way or fell out the way, and unfortunately fell in and under the wheel of the grocery van, and John Fry drove away. It was just a sheer... tragedy, accident.
Yeah.
No one knows to blame for it.
No. But it must have been devastating for the family and your mum. Yeah,
it rocked my mother to the bits.
Yeah.
Even before she died, like, she was still talking about Kieran.
Yeah. So, but how old were you then?
Would be maybe 12, 13 at the time. Yeah.
So it's hard to know what was going on, how to deal with that, all that going on, wasn't it?
It was. It was very hard. Yeah, very hard. But other than that, we had a fantastic childhood.
We
entertained ourselves, playing football. My brothers and sisters will tell about the fights we had after the games of football.
It's Gaelic football.
Gaelic football, And then the arguments we had over games of cards, only playing for halfpennies and pennies and all that. And my mother, to this day, fair play to her, and I will say that any bit of argument was on that there, straight in, took the cards, picked them up, and no hesitation, straight into the back of the fire. And that's where the cards went.
Oh, okay.
No more cards.
Was she a strong woman then?
She was. She was a very strong woman, yeah.
Well, she'd have to be, wouldn't she, I suppose, with 13 of you to do it.
She was, yeah.
And what about your dad? Well, your dad was...
My dad was a farmer, a very hard-working farmer he was. Yeah. Worked very hard, so he did. He'd done dealing in pigs and cattle and that, and then run the farm as well. Like, he was a very hard worker. Never remember him missing a day at work in my life.
Yeah.
Through illness, through sickness or anything like that.
Yeah. And was the farm in the family for, like, generations?
Nearly sure my dad was the second generation. My grandfather bought it.
Okay.
And I'm nearly sure now. I wouldn't be 100% sure, but I'm sure my grandfather bought it, and then my dad, he inherited it when my grandfather died, like.
We won't hold it to you. It's all right.
Right, okay. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah.
It's all right. Well, a part of this show is about playing songs as well.
Yeah,
so
sorry.
I've asked you to pick some songs, and your first songs you've picked is Distant Drums. So just tell us why you picked that one.
My mother, bless her, she was a very headstrong woman and very strong and all, but her singing wasn't very, very good. Even she'll admit to it. Like, and one day I was looking at her, and that song had happened to be on the radio, and my mother was standing trying to sing Distant Drums. So it stuck in the back of my mind from that day onwards. Jim Reeves and Distant Drums.
Okay, let's play that one then.
Yeah.
I hear the sound of distant drums far away, far away. And if they call for me to come, then I must go. Share all the time we can before it's too late. Love me now, for now is all the time there may be. If you love me, Mary, Mary, marry me. I
Distant Drums by Jim Reeves. It's the first choice of our guest tonight, Dermot, who's born in Derry, 1956, and talking about his life. So we've kind of still in your childhood and growing up in Derry, and what that was like, I suppose. You go to school in the local village? Or?
Yeah. Well, the first school I went to, like my children, they laugh about it. They don't believe me. There was only two school teachers in the school, Master Corey and Miss McAuleen. And there was no electric in the school or none. I only done 2 years there, and then I went to the primary school in Ballaghy then.
Did you get expelled, was it?
No, they closed it down,
Okay.
But going to school everywhere, it was about just over 2 mile, I think it was, out of where we walked. And we walked there morning and night till school.
Yeah, so the school in town, right?
Both schools.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah.
But as I say, we walked it all weather, rain, hail, and snow.
And then I suppose were you working on the farm still? Did you have jobs?
We were doing bits. And I had evening jobs to do. Like, I used to go and I cleaned the horses out for Dr. Larry. And then I would get on my bicycle or get a bus or get a lift up to Jim Brennan's house. And I would help Jim sweep out the pigs and all that. And then at the finish, then there was a neighbour of ours, Gerald Leslie, wasn't very well. He'd had an operation, and Gerald had a farm. And I would help Gerald on the farm, do his chores and all that, and then home and bed and back up the next morning, start school again, the same thing all over again.
Yeah, well, what about weekends? You still working?
Yeah, the weekends were the same. There was no There was no different. But I wasn't the only one. All my brothers done that. All my sisters, every one of us.
Yeah.
We all, every one of them, as soon as you were fit to work, you went out and got a job.
So that's what was expected, yeah, wasn't it, for everyone?
Like, I have 8 sisters, and 5 of them are hairdressers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they've done yours?
Many a time they've done mine, yeah.
The family business.
Family business.
And where are they? Where is the family?
I have a sister in Australia. Teresa's in Australia.
Yeah.
My youngest sister, Olivia, is in Ironbridge. She's a school teacher down in Ironbridge, and the rest of them are all in Ireland.
Yeah. Makes sense. Mm. So, but you were growing up, I suppose, in those years where, I suppose, in Derry, things had changed in your lifetimes in terms of kind of troubles and politics and things that were going on. So probably in the 50s, it wasn't as a bigger thing that was happening.
No, there wasn't. I think that...
In the 60s?
Say, after the Civil Rights March, it all, totally, everything all changed. The whole thing all changed from... You know, where there was not, say, there was bitterness, but there was, you know, you could tell the atmosphere had changed between the two different religions, and all that, and...
So that was the early 70s, wasn't it? 71, I think, in...
71, that's right, yeah.
So you'd have been only, 15 years old, and so it'd be a big change, and you kind of noticed that. What ways did it affect your life from... I suppose that time.
Well, let's be honest with you. Whenever from that time and on, we never went into Derry. We never went into Belfast.
Right. Yeah.
You never went in there because we didn't know the area. If you got caught up in the wrong place at the wrong time, the consequences could be horrendous. So we never bothered with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
but in the town where you lived.
Yeah, in the
Balahi,
town. Well, the town I lived at Balahi, I would say it maybe would be 60-40. 60% Catholic, 40% Protestant.
Yeah. Right, so
and
big
to be fair, we didn't really, we never had much conflict with her, you know, the Protestant neighbours or anything like that. We never really, they never bothered us, so we didn't bother them. Everybody just went on about their own business.
But even in that small town, do you think there was a change from what it was in the 60s to the 70s, or do you think there was not as much change?
Well, I don't think there was much a change. It was, you go into any town, you go into one side of the streets painted red, white and blue, and the other side painted green, white and gold. But that's just everywhere you go, that was just everywhere you go. But I wouldn't say, I wouldn't say that it probably maybe, I don't know, maybe it might have changed, but I didn't see any much changing on it.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, the next song is kind of associated with that kind of thing that's going on there. It's the Town I Love So Well, which is a song famously about Derry.
That's right,
and the things going on there.
Yeah.
So,
it's a true, it's exactly a true song, that's what it is.
Yeah, let's play that one then.
Gas yard wall, and we laughed through the smoke and the smell. Going home in the rain, running up the dark lane, past the jail and down behind the fountain. Those were high. So many, many ways in the town I loved so well. In the early morning, the shirt factory horn called women from Cregan, the moor and the bog, while the men the dole played a mother's role, feathered the children
and then trained the dog. And when times got tough, there was just about enough, but they saw it through without complaining. For deep inside was a burning pride in the town I loved so well. There was music there in the dairy air, like a language that we all could understand. I remember the day that I earned my first pay, when I played in a small pickup band. There I spent my youth, and to tell you the truth, I was sad to leave it all behind me. For I'd learned about life, and I'd found a wife in the town I loved so well. When I returned, how my eyes have burned to see how a town could be brought to its knees by the armored cars and the bombed out bars and the gas that hangs on to every breeze. The army's installed by that old gas yard wall, and the damned barbed wire gets higher and higher. With their tanks and their guns, oh my God, what have they done to the town I loved so well? The music's gone, but they carry on, for their spirit's been bruised, never broken. They will not forget, but their hearts are set on tomorrow and peace once again. For what's done is done, and what's won is won, and what's lost is lost and gone forever. I can only pray for a bright, brand new day in the town I love so.
The Town I Love So Well, that's the Luke Kelly version, but there's loads of great versions out there. But he's got a good voice, that Luke, hasn't he?
Like, he has indeed, yeah.
He's apparently nearly as good as yours. I've just found out, he's our Dermot's a bit of a singer, so I don't think I'll get him singing tonight, but, you know, You never know. No.
Maybe 6 or 7 pints of Guinness then.
Is that what it takes?
I could be encouraged, yeah.
And you're telling me about that song as well. So I mean, you're saying it's like a true story.
It is like a true story, yeah. Because Derry was known for its shorts, its linen factories and its shorts. Making shorts, yeah, it was known.
Yeah,
that's if you went to Derry, if the question asked you what would you expect to take by in Derry, it would be a short.
Okay, right, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is, yeah, that's Derry was known for shorts, yeah.
Yeah, so back to your life, Dermot. Yeah. So you stayed at school till what age?
I say school till I was 15, 16, I'm not sure.
And you were having good fun.
Yeah.
But working hard, but saying it was good fun with you.
I loved my football. My sport was football was
yeah
a big issue. I remember whenever we there was one time in Ballaghy, around their neighbourhood and all that, we wouldn't be allowed to play Gaelic or soccer football.
Yeah.
It was classed as an English game, see, and wouldn't be allowed to do it. I think my first cousin, Noel Scullion, was the first one to bring the soccer, put the soccer goals up at the back of the house, like, and it was the talk of the whole neighbourhood, that, like.
Okay, so you weren't allowed to play soccer?
No.
But wasn't you also, was you ever kind of banned from playing Gaelic football?
No, the Gaelic football and the hurling was always the number one priority.
Yeah.
More so the Gaelic football.
Yeah. And did you play for, like, the school, the town?
I played school and I played for Ballaghy Club, like.
Yeah.
They tell the paper described me one day as they said if Dermot Lagan jumped up to catch and a crow flew across, he would have jumped up and he would have caught it.
So that's not bad. So
I don't know where I threw that was or not. Like.
Yeah. Has he kept the cutscene? Have you still got the cutscene of the paper?
I think one of the lads read it. Well, it was in the middle of the Observer. That was the local paper. Like,
yeah.
It only came out once every Thursday. Like. My dad was a great footballer. Yeah. My dad was one of the founder. Members of the first one to found the Lobby Football Club.
Right, yeah.
And then whenever the Lobby was... And then he moved to Ballaghy. Like.
Yeah.
We would be the last house in Ballaghy Parish.
Oh, yeah.
There's a river between us called the Parish River. And the river is... When you go over the river, you're in Lobby. Come over, stay on the side, you're in Ballaghy.
So he didn't move far, did he?
He didn't move. Didn't
No. Yeah. Do you ever have as much to do with the Sheffield St Vincent's?
I don't know,
there's a great Gaelic football team called St Vincent's. It's been running about 6-7 years now, is it?
Yes, about that, yeah. And I love watching them. I go to nearly every game there where, yeah. And I'd be offended if they didn't ask me to do umpire, like, because...
Oh, you're umpire?
I do the umpire for them, yeah.
Is that like the scoring bit?
I tell the referee where it's wide or
it's wide.
Yeah. Sometimes it's... My decision is not, it's not acceptable.
Is it argued, yeah.
Yeah. But I try to do it to the best of my ability.
So yeah, so you've got a little white flag, is it?
You're going to have a little white flag. You have 3 flags now. You have a white one, green one,
orange one. It's the 2-pointer,
isn't it? The 2-pointer now, yeah.
We're probably boring the audience now, aren't we, talking technical.
Yeah.
No, it's great stuff, isn't it? And it's Wilson Croft Road, where do you play, is it? Where's the home games?
Warminster Road.
Warminster Road.
So,
if anyone's not seen that, it's a great day out, isn't it? And a great game. And the team's doing well.
They're doing very well. They played 5 and 1-5, so they have,
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
I suppose we better talk about you some more, don't we? Keep going. So, we got you to kind of school days.
Yeah.
And then what happened after school? So
after school, then we had a cattle lorry. We dealt in pigs and all that. And every one of my brothers all took their turn on it. Like, and then it was funny. It's a funny scenario. The lorry was too much for one man, and it didn't pay enough wages for two.
Yeah,
if you understand what I'm saying, like
yeah.
And then I my brothers before me done it. I done it. My younger brother done it, and then it petered out. Then it wasn't feasible for anybody to do it at all. Like, but it was a hard life, and it was hard work. And we never. My father was a great worker. He never stopped working, so he did. But and it was hard work. But up early in the morning, late nights, rain, hail, and snow. 52 weeks a year.
Yeah. Well, it must. I mean, it did well to get you 13.
We grew a lot of our own vegetables.
Yeah.
We grew our own potatoes and all that. I remember the year we had the 13 acres of land 13 acres of potatoes in and all that, and thought, okay, we're ready for digging now, we'll make some money and all that. Nobody wanted potatoes that year.
Wow.
We loaded them into the trailer with a JCB digger and put them in the tip.
Wow.
Because nobody wanted them. They were just 13 acres. And that, we weren't the only one. Not every other farmer in the area was the same.
That's crazy, isn't it? Yeah. So, did that affect...
Well, it was. It was very disheartening. Like, we, you know, when you thought you were going to make a few pounds with selling the potatoes and all that and shipping them out to England and all that there.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was just...
Enough of that,
the government just come out and they put this purple dye on it, dyed them, and then you weren't allowed to sell them for human consumption.
Yeah.
You could sell them, feed the sows or the pigs with them, but you weren't allowed to feed them to humans.
Yeah. But you were telling me some funny stories that happened with your childhood and the sisters.
It was... Oh, we weren't very old at the time. We had chickens. My mother had chickens, and we had a chicken house and all that. And used to go around and collect the eggs and all that. But one of the chickens died this day, and I mean, I thought to myself that I would give it a proper Catholic funeral burial.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a little box, put it in a little box, down into the moss, and my sisters all walking behind and all that. And Diana dug the hole in the moss and put it in there and put a little crucifix up on the top of the grave. And it was funny at the time, but it's a bit...
Yeah, but your sister took it a lot more seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Younger sisters, I presume.
What it is now today, like, it's a bit of embarrassing, but my younger sister still thinks it's hilarious. It's hilarious.
I mean, it's just good to get a picture of kind of the hard times that were there, obviously, kind of surviving, but obviously you make your own fun and had good times and good fond memories of it.
To be fair, it wasn't just, we weren't the only family. All the families around us were all going through the same hard times, like, and all. Times were hard times, And as I say, like, we all come through it.
Yeah.
Flying colours.
So, we probably should play a song, shouldn't we? You've got Donegal Danny
next,
which is one you could sing, innit? Yeah.
again, a few pints of Guinness would make it go a little easier, yeah. This song reminds me, because I remember one day we went to school, and we went on school retreat to Donegal, and in the village we went, I couldn't forget the village we went into, and the old fishermen were all sitting outside the pubs, smoking their pipes, mending their nets and their baskets and all that. And I just think to myself that this is what a fisherman's life was all about. Like,
like Donegal Danny.
Donegal Danny, yeah. I think it's a lovely song. I love.
I remember the night that he came in, wintry, cold and damp. A giant of a man in an oilskin coat, and the bundle that told he was a tramp. He stood at the bar and he called a pint, then turned and gazed at the fire. On a night like this, to be safe and dry is my one and only desire. So here's to those that are dead and gone, the friends that I love dear. And here's to you, and I bid you adieu, St. Donegal, Danny's been here, me boys, Donegal, Danny's been here. Then in a voice that was hushed and low, he said, listen, I'll tell you a tale. How a man of the sea became a man of the roads, and never more will set sail. I fished out of Howth and Killybegs, Ardglass and Baltimore. But the cruel sea has beaten me, and I'll end my days on the shore. So here's to those that are dead and gone, the friends that I love dear. And here's to you, and I'll bid you adieu, St. Donegal, Danny's been here, me boys, Donegal, Danny's been here. One fateful night in the wind and the rain, we set sail from Killybegs town. There were five of us from sweet Donegal, and one from County Down. We were fishermen who worked the sea and never counted the cost. But I never thought that night was done, that my fine friends would all be lost. So here's to those that are dead and gone, the friends that I love dear. And here's to you, and I'll bid you adieu, St. Donegal, Danny's been here. Me boys, Donegal, Danny's been here. Then the storm, it broke and drove the boat to the rocks about 10 miles from shore. As we fought the tide, we hoped inside to see our homes once more. Then we struck a rock and hold the bow, and all of us knew that she'd go down. So we jumped right into the icy sea and prayed to God we wouldn't drown. But the raging sea was rising still as we struck out for the land. And she fought with all her cruelty to claim that gallant band. By St. John's Point in the early dawn, I dragged myself on the shore. And I cursed the sea for what she'd done, and vowed to sail her nevermore. So here's to those that are dead and gone, the friend that I love dear. And here's to you, and I'll bid you adieu, St. Donegal, Danny's been here. Me boys, Donegal, Danny's been here. Ever since that night I've been on the road, traveling and trying to forget that awful night I lost all my friends. I see their faces yet, and often at night when the sea is high and the rain is tearing at my skin, I hear the cries of drowning men floating over on the wind. So here's to those that are dead and gone, the friend that I love dear. And here's to you, and I'll be with you, St. Donegal, Danny's been here. Me boys, Donegal, Danny's been here.
Donegal Danny, that was a Dubliners version, and it's the choice of my guest tonight. It's Dermot, who's here on Deserted Island Disc. So every week we try and get someone who's born in Ireland and now living in South Yorkshire to come and talk to us about their life and pick some songs. So we're over halfway through the show, Dermot, and we've not left Ireland yet, so we'll see if we can get through. So, like, go on, let's talk about you leaving Ireland. What happened first?
The first time I was leaving Ireland, I remember I seen an advertisement in the paper about plant operators being acquired in AF Budge, Westcar Road, Redford. And I remember, I don't know where my sister Anne Maria will remember this or not, but she left me up to the airport to get on the plane to go to East Midlands to get a train to Redford and all that. And as I was getting off the plane, or getting out of the car at Belfast Airport, on the radio was the song, "Whoa, ho, I'm going to Barbados."
Yeah.
And I thought, "Whoa, ho, I'm not going to Barbados. Yeah. I'm going to Redford." But that's the last song that was on. It was on the radio as I was just closing the car door when Ave Maria dropped me off to take Redford to come over here. And then I come over here.
We should have played that one. That's a great song, isn't it? We get the crowd going, and you singing.
Yeah, I come over here, and I wasn't very old. I'd say I was about 18 years of age, maybe 18 and a half of that, like, and 1974 that was. And I came over, and then I got to West Carr Road, Redford. I got in there, went in there, budgets paid for all my accommodations that weekend there, and then I went to Durham, and then I got this message that the money in London was a lot bigger than it was anywhere else in the part of the UK. Yeah. So I thought to myself, well, I'll head to London. I can do the work in London.
What work was it, Dermot?
Plant operating, driving diggers. And
driving diggers, yeah.
So anyway, I went down to London and got a job. I got a job with, what was his name again? A demolition crowd. But I hated it. It was the first time ever I was in a room and there were 13 beds in it.
Yeah.
And there was all types, all nationalities.
And all older.
Yeah, all folks. Types of nationalities were in this room and all that. I tell you what, the room was £7.50 a week. That's what it was.
Yeah.
For that, and if you went in, the landlady, if the Mayo woman had it, and if you went in, you were allowed one bath a week, and if you had an extra bath a week, it was an extra £10.
Wow, yeah. And you're doing hard work, aren't you? Dusty work.
And I hated it, so I did. And I only stayed there 3 weeks, and then I went home.
But also, like, the other men there, they'll be all drunken.
They were to foot errands coming in and left, right. And a foot errand is where you put it on your shoe when you're digging the road with a spade. Yeah. It's a steel plate. And they would be coming with foot errands, would be clapping up down the footpath, and the old boys would be coming in drunk and all sorts. But it was very interesting. It was an experience. That I wouldn't be dying to repeat it like
that. Yeah. But so you got out of there pretty quick.
I got out of there pretty quick.
And you went back up to Redford and...
Well, I went back up to Redford and then I stayed up there for... Well, I went up to Durham, that's what it was. I was up in Durham. I went to Durham, Ashwinning in Durham, and was up there for about maybe 3 or 4 years. 2 or 3 years, I would say. And then you got familiarised, and then what it was... You followed the work there. You found out where all the good work was at, and you just followed, and that was me. And
so thankfully there must have been some work around here, wasn't there?
There was, yeah. Yeah, I came
here. When was that?
I came here in 84, I think it was.
Right.
To the reinstating of Rotter Valley.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Myself and Pat Lynch and Ginger Jordan came in from Penrith. We had finished on Penrith. And we heard this work down in here with Fitzvice, and we come down in here, and we started here then.
So is that creating Rother Valley?
Rother Valley, doing the lakes and the river diversion.
So turn it into
what
reservoirs.
It is today.
My
claim to fame is all the slopes in that river. I topsoiled them all, and
right.
That's why they're so good.
Is that right? It's hard to tell, though, isn't it?
if you have a few pints of Guinness, they look better. So they do.
Is that right? Yeah. So how long did that job take? How long were you?
That job took, as I say, then what it was, that type of work, then the machine operating and that, it was season work, that.
Okay.
Right, whenever November time came, the weather would break and everything would be parked up and all that. And I never was out. In the 51 years, I think, I'm in this country, I've never been out of work once.
Yeah.
Signed on as unemployed once.
Yeah.
But
so when the plant work stopped, you'd just do labouring?
You'd do labouring, you'd do anything at all.
Yeah.
Just do anything at all.
So when you're in Sheffield, though, something significant happened, did it?
Yeah, well, I met my wife then, yeah.
So good.
I met her up in the Irish Centre in Brunswick Road. And I would say I was about 27 then, 28. My wife was 20. And... We got together, and then we...
Hold on, come on. More courting stories.
There was courting stories, yeah. Like, I liked my odd pint of Guinness at the... Even every night I liked it, like, and I suppose most of our courting was maybe spent in the pubs.
Yeah.
Which, my wife wouldn't be in a big drinker at the time, like, but she would have followed me, like, and all that, like.
Yeah.
But, we bought Derbyshire Lane, and we got married, and... Three lovely kids, and I'm very, very happy.
Oh, very good. Yeah, should we give them a mention?
Yeah, Bedella, my wife, she's idolizer. I idolize her. I'd be lost totally. Without her.
Oh, that's lovely.
Olivia and John and Joseph.
Yeah.
The three kids there, I've totally been lost without them.
Oh, well.
I just had it there on Wednesday there. I had a bit of a scare. I was diagnosed with two small spots in one of my lungs. They didn't diagnose it as cancer, but they didn't say it wasn't cancer. And on Wednesday morning this week, I got the good news to say that it's not cancer.
Oh, fantastic. That is good to hear.
Yeah. It's coal dust that I had from working in the open cast pits in the mines and the dust and all. And I go in now for another scan now on the 9th of June, and then they're going to decide where to leave it at bay or to remove it.
Okay. So, well, things like that put your life in perspective and make you appreciate the family.
Without all the family and without my wife Della and all that, they're around me, like, I don't know. Because they kept saying to me, oh, it's nothing, Dad, you're not, it's not, it's not, it's not, no, no, no. And at the back of your mind, you still think that there is something there.
Yeah.
There is something there.
And you think, what could happen?
What could have happened, happen. But touch wood now, everything's all good, yeah. And I recovered from my 2 heart attacks. My daughter Olivia says I'm the cat with 9 lives.
Yeah,
so
well,
I got 6 left.
Well, I hope you, more than that, dear. But it'd be great to see you around. Yeah. Well, the next song is, I think it sounds like it's associated with your family and your wife. Funny, yeah,
it's one that I associate with my wife Della, like, and I class her as my best friend.
Oh, beautiful.
Placed gold on my finger. You brought love like I've never known. You gave life to our children and to me a reason to go on. You're my bread when I'm hungry. You're my shelter from troubled winds. You're my anchor in life's ocean. But most of all, you're my best friend. When I need hope and inspiration, you're always strong when I'm tired and weak. I could search this whole world over, you'd still be everything that I need. You're my bread when I'm hungry. You're my shelter from troubled winds. You're my anchor in life's ocean. But most of all, you're my best friend. You're my bread when I'm hungry. You're my shelter from troubled winds. You're my anchor in life's ocean. But most of all, you're my best friend.
Lovely. That's You're My Best Friend by Don Williams. So, Dermot, how's it going?
It's going good, yeah.
Yeah, you're happy now. Yeah. We're nearly done. Oh. Only 15 minutes left to cram in a few more songs and hear about your life. So, a big part of your life now is the Grapes Pub.
The Grapes is a big part of my life, yeah. The first time I got to know Anne Flynn, I hadn't a clue where I was at. We were down in Leicester.
Who's Anne Flynn for the listeners?
Anne Flynn is the owner of the Grapes Pub. By the way, a brilliant pub in Sheffield. A brilliant, lovely, beautiful pint of Guinness in it, so there is.
Yeah.
But we were working down in a village in Leicestershire, Colville, for a crowd from Barnsley, for Johnny Hayes, J.C. Hayes, like. And the fellow wrote with me, we were staying in a caravan, them days, you to save spending money and lodging and stuff like that, in digs and stuff like that, you got yourself a caravan and you put the caravan on the site and you had electric and showers and all in it, the same as what you would normally house like. But this fella, Peter Webb, said to me one day, I was in the caravan down on my own and they were all going home, and he said to me, do you want to come to Barnsley with me this weekend? I said, yeah, I could do, yeah, I can do, yeah. He said, you can come up to Barnsley and stay with me and the wife. So that was all right. Headed up from Leicester up to Barnsley. He said, we'll just call into Blackburn Meadows here and we'll have a drink in Riley's pub here in Blackburn Meadows.
Yeah.
Fair enough, then that's not a problem, yeah, all right. Into Riley's pub, the Guinness was flowing, the crack was good, the bookies was up in the car park, the bet, you had your bet and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was all right. He never suggested going to Barnsley. I never suggested going to Barnsley. And the next thing, Anne Flynn's mum and dad would have sandwiches out and chicken legs and all sorts and out and ate them and all that. So here and behold, then the next morning I woke up and I was lying across the settee in the pub. In the pub, lying in the chair with a pillow at the top of me and a blanket over me and my shoes, somebody to, I don't know who put me to bed that night, but to make a long story short, we never made Barnsley at all.
Yeah, well, that's it. Why would you? Why would you go to Barnsley when you go? Is that the sportsman pub?
Sportsman. Yeah, Blackburn Meadows, yeah.
Yeah.
And I never forget it. Anne and I often laughed about it because they had a big, long jukebox. And the girl's aunt's sisters would be younger and all that. And they never used to put no money in it. You used to lift the lid up and they had it all to push the buttons in under, the next thing Big Tom and the mainliner would come on, or Philomena Begley, and one of them come on. No money ever went into the jukebox.
Well, that's still the same in the grapes, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah.
I'm thinking about time for us. We was going to play Philomena Begley on, weren't we? So you can just give us a few bars of it. How does it start?
England Motorway.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, come, my little son, and I will tell you what we'll do. Undress yourself and get into bed, and a tale I'll tell to you. It's all about your daddy, he's a man you seldom see. For he's had to roam far away from home, away from you and me. I think I'll let Philomena Begley take over from
fantastic.
That.
Fantastic. You got a lovely voice, haven't you? That's great. Yeah,
my dad, Lord of Mercy, my dad was, and even my sister, my elder sister, they were very, very musical minded.
Yeah.
And my dad was, bless him, he used to play the mouth organ. He was used to try to teach us to play it. And of course, being 10, 11 years of age, you weren't interested, but I do regret it today.
So did you sing with the family when you
were
kids?
Yeah,
that's good.
Oh, yes, Minnie Kayleigh was in our house. The neighbours used to come around and sit around the old hearth fire and the fiddle would be going and Paddy Scullion would be there with the tape recorder and my dad would have been there and the mouth organ. They were brilliant nights.
Yeah.
No television, we entertained ourselves.
That's it, yeah. Great. Playing the cards, singing songs. And you talking about your sport. So another big thing that's big for you now is sport, and you're an adopted Sheffield United fan.
I'm an adopted Sheffield United fan, yeah. I love watching Sheffield United. I'm going to Wembley on Saturday night to watch them. For my sins, 7 times to Wembley and never been on the winning side yet.
Oh.
So this time it has to change.
I feel good for you. Mm. I'm a neutral.
Yeah.
Not being from these parts, but I hope you win. Because Chris Wilder, I think he's a good manager, Chris, and he'll get him revved up, won't he?
And he is a lovely bloke. Can I tell you what Chris did to me?
Okay.
I met Chris one night, Saturday night in the Grapes, him and Fran, his wife, were in the Grapes, and all. And the following Monday was my youngest son's 15th birthday. So I went and I got a piece of paper from behind the bar and a pen, and I said to him, Chris, do me a favour, please, would you? Just sign that there and wish my son happy birthday.
Yeah.
And he said to me, no, he said, give me your address, and he said, and I'll get him something. I said, no, and Chris, I don't. Fran said to me, Dermot, she says, if he says he'll get him something, you best give him your address and I'll get him something. And so that was all right. Anyway, I give him my address down, thinking, forget about it, that's, you know, he'll...
Yeah.
He'd be too busy to worry about that and all that. So my son was playing for Abbey Lane at the time, and him was away on Sunday morning playing a match at Abbey Lane. Get into the car and put the phone into the hands-free, and next thing the phone rang, and my wife Della rang me, and she says, "You'll never guess who was at our front door this morning." I said, "No, who?" She says, "Chris Wilder." I said, "You're joking." "No," I said, "he bought a shirt for Joseph and all that." We had a goalkeeper on loan from Chelsea in the name of Jamal Blackman.
Yeah. You know,
and we had him on loan, and we played, I forget who we played that Saturday, but Jamal Blackman's shirt must have been in the changing room. Chris Wilder went from his house into the changing room in Bramall Lane, got the shirt, wrote on it, "Best wishes, Joseph, happy birthday, Chris Wilder, UTB."
That's it.
And brought it to our front door.
That's it. Well, all those people, there's a few Chris Wilder haters, isn't there, from other teams, but well, he is a nice man.
He is. He's a lovely bloke, so he is. And his wife, and like the family and all there, they're all lovely people, so they're, yeah.
Oh, good.
The Darcys and all that, like, they're all cracking people there. And quite honest with you, on my travel, and I've done a fair bit of travel in this country, north, south, Wales, Scotland, I've worked all over. I have met some fantastic people.
Yeah.
Oh. Some fantastic people.
Well, I think you breed it, Dermot, aren't you? You're a lovely man yourself, so well, I think you are. And I think, you're always got that friendly face, and you're always interested in people. And you're there to speak to people. Like,
there's names that sticks in your face or sticks in your mind and all that. And like mine's saying, and I don't mean it, event. There was a fellow I worked with him. Pat Gallagher was his name. Donegal was his name. And he had the nickname of Soapy.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I don't know why they call him Soapy. Because Pat wasn't very fond of washing. And they maintained that if you hid money in under the bar of soap, you never would find it.
There you go. Huh? Oh, right, we better get these songs in. So we're going to do the one, you probably don't know the words to this one, do you? Because it's Annie's song, but you have your own version, don't you? But
I'd be honest with you, I don't really know. I know the Sheffield United version of it, I don't think I could sing the proper.
No, we'll play the proper one.
Right,
for
okay then, thanks.
You fill up my senses like a night in a forest, like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again. Come let me love you, let me give my life to you, let me drown in your laughter, let me die in your arms. Beside you, let me always be with you. Come, let me love you. Come, love me. Like the mountains in springtime, like a walk in the rain, like a storm in the desert, like a sleepy blue ocean. You fill up my senses, come fill me again.
and his song John Denver. Lovely. Yeah, so here we are on Deserted Island Disc. So I've got guests lined up for the next 3 weeks who are all born in Ireland and now living in South Yorkshire. So if we are looking for new guests to work with us throughout July and come on the show. So if you know people, they can get in touch with the show. We've got Deserted Island, Ireland spelt like the country, discs@gmail.com, and get in touch. And yeah, we're all open for new people coming on the show. But we've got the last 5 minutes of Dermot. So we were want to talk about your life now, Dermot, and what you're up to these days.
Well, as I say, now I'm 68 now, going on 60. I'll be 69 this year. I'm still working. I still work, yeah. And I think to myself that if I'm fit to work, I need a hobby. I need something to do that would be
radio presenter.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of that. Yeah, I was thinking of that, Ben. Yeah. But I don't like the idea of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Probably it would be pointless anyway because I'd be awake anyway at 5 o'clock. Yeah. Even on a Saturday morning when I don't have
Is that what you do now if you work? Yeah.
I have to be in Derby for 6:30, see. Which I don't mind doing. I don't mind that to say. Like, I'm just thankful that I'm fit to get up and that I'm able to go to work. Like, but
you're in a managerial position.
I do site management, doing setting out and putting the machines to work and keeping them at it. And
is that always in Derby then? Are you still following the work? Yeah,
just follow the work. Well, I'm with this company now. A lot of ones, the nursery, and there used to be a lot of ones used to travel about and finish and start a new job and finish and start. But I wasn't one of those. I'd done 14 years with Fitzwise. I'd done 14 years with Merriman's.
Right.
And I'm 15 years now with Stokies.
Yeah.
As they say in our business, a rolling stone gathers no muck.
Right.
Well, I didn't roll, but I still didn't get no muck. In other words, if you're rolling all the time and walking and moving and moving, you're not making no money then. You're spending whatever money you make, you see. That's what a rolling stone is. But I have no, my life at the present, I wouldn't swap my life for the world.
Yeah.
If I had it to live over again, I would live it all over again the very same way as I did. I wouldn't have the heart attacks and I wouldn't have the spots in my lungs. I'll cut that bit out. But other than that, I married my wife Della and my kids and all. I wouldn't change that for the world, so I wouldn't.
Oh, that's lovely, dear man. And you can see that, and you know, when you see you around and you kind of smiley face. Yeah. I mean, you must be occasional times you're a bit grumpy, isn't it?
Well, maybe sometimes, yeah, sometimes. The football boys will tell you if they're kicking them left, right, and centre, and they're going in all directions. I can be a bit grumpy then, so I would. But other than that, it's, you know.
Yeah. And so, your other sports, you like the rugby?
I love my rugby, I'd be a big Ulster, support Ulster in rugby. I support Ulster would be my number one team, Ireland would be number two, but any other Irish team that's playing, as long as they're not playing Ulster. If Ulster were playing Munster, I'd be shouting for Ulster.
All right, well, I think we're just going to have time for half of your last song, which is a rugby-related one.
Yeah.
It's The Fields of Athenry. So thank you so much, Dermot, for
not at all.
The show.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, take care.
By a lonely prison wall, I heard a young girl call. Michael, they have taken you away, for you stole Trevelyan's corn, so the young might see the morn. Now a prison ship lies waiting in the bay. Watched the small free birds fly. Our love was on the wing. We had dreams and songs to sing. It's so lonely round the fields of Athenry. By a lonely prison wall, waters